Ungifted, Intelligence Redefined, by Scott Barry Kaufman. IQ and learning disabilities. The IQ test is just a brief assessment of one trait. It doesn't say anything about a person's past or future potential. It's only used to match a person to an intervention. Each person has numerous opportunities to demonstrate their intellectual prowess. A single test score certainly has no impact on a person's chances of success in life. There are so many moving parts to the puzzle of human intelligence, and no easy answers. Nevertheless, there's one sure fact. Everyone has unique needs and is worthy of encouragement. What have genes got to do with it? In 1990, the behavioral geneticist Thomas Bouchard Jr. and his colleagues at the University of Minnesota published a striking finding. About 70% of the differences in IQ found among twins and triplets living apart were associated with genetic variation. What's more, the identical twins, whose genes were assumed to be 100% identical, were remarkably similar to identical twins reared together on various measures of personality, occupational and leisure time interests, and social attitudes, despite spending most of their lives apart. This study, and hundreds of other twin studies, have painted a consistent picture. Genetic variation matters. The studies say nothing about how they matter, or which genes matter, but they show quite convincingly that biological variation does matter. Genes vary within any group of people, and this variation contributes to variations in these people's behaviors. The most important lesson researchers have learned from over 25 years worth of twin studies is that virtually every single psychological trait you can measure has a heritable basis, because our psychological characteristics reflect the physical structure of our brains, and because our genes contribute to those physical structures, it is unlikely that there are any psychological characteristics that are completely unaffected by our DNA. Who is learning disabled? In Germany, the neurologist Kurt Goldstein studied the deficits of soldiers who sustained head injuries. His focus was on their deficits in visual perception and attention. Goldstein's student Alfred Strauss took this approach and studied adolescents with learning difficulties. Along with educator Laura Littinen, they developed remediation techniques that involved providing students with a distraction-free environment and training perceptual deficits. They merely inferred brain damage, though. They didn't actually peer inside the head. The Goldstein-Strauss approach was widespread in the 1950s and 1960s. Thousands of children were identified as having minimal brain dysfunction by the use of a checklist, which included things such as academic difficulty, aggression, and acting out. If a student exhibited 9 out of 37 symptoms, they received treatment, which typically meant they spent hours a day doing perceptual tasks such as connecting dots and learning how to distinguish between a foreground and background. Although a systematic review of 81 studies concluded that these techniques were useless, many public schools in the United States continued to rely on perceptual training to remediate learning difficulties. In the 1950s and 1960s, a number of psychologists and speech-language specialists began focusing more on the specific cognitive processes relating to academic difficulties. Their focus was much more targeted on specific areas of academic weakness. But this hodgepodge of different approaches created much confusion within the schools, because children with distinctly different areas of academic weaknesses were lumped together, and no one knew what to call them. Children who were having difficulties learning in school were given a number of different labels, including dyslexia, learning disorder, perceptual disorder, and minimal brain function. Who is gifted? A big boost to gifted education came in 1972, when U.S. Commissioner of Education Sidney Marland Jr. wrote the groundbreaking report that bears his name. Marland estimated that only a small percentage of the 1.5 to 2.5 million U.S. gifted children were benefiting from special education, and he emphasized that gifted education had deteriorated. The Marland Report increased public awareness that the needs of gifted children were being neglected. But the most influential aspect of the report is that it broadened, for the first time, the definition of giftedness beyond high IQ. Gifted and talented children were defined as those who demonstrated achievement and/or potential ability in any of the following areas, singularly or in combination. 1. General intellectual ability. 2. Specific academic aptitude. 3. Creative or productive thinking. 4. Leadership ability. 5. Visual and performing arts. 6. Psychomotor abilities. Multiple intelligences. In his 1983 bestseller, Frames of Mind, The Theory of Multiple Intelligences, Howard Gardner stressed the need for educators and psychologists to broaden their definition of intelligence as well as their methodologies. Relying on a number of criteria, including an identifiable core set of mental operations, brain damage, distinct developmental and evolutionary history, and special populations such as prodigies and savants, he argued that there are 7 independent intelligences: logical-mathematical, linguistic, spatial, bodily, kinesthetic, musical, interpersonal, and intrapersonal. More recently added naturalistic intelligence, Gardner argued that schools tend to overemphasize logical, mathematical, and linguistic intelligence to the inclusion of the other intelligences. In 2011, Rina Sabotnik, Paula Olszewski-Kobulius, and Frank Worwell proposed a talent development megamodel, a model integrating the most compelling components of already established models intended to apply to all domains of endeavor. Drawing on research in human development, expertise, creativity, motivation, and optimal performance, they argued that giftedness is a developmental process that is domain-specific and malleable. They point out that there are differences in how performers and producers are identified and developed. In summary, their model is grounded in five main principles. 1. Abilities, both general and special, matter and can be developed. 2. Domains of talent have varying developmental trajectories. 3. Opportunities need to be provided to young people and taken by them. 4. Psychosocial variables such as handling setbacks, adjusting anxiety levels, and so on, are determining factors in the successful development of talent. 5. Eminence is the intended outcome of gifted education. Approach and avoidance temperaments. Approach and avoidance are two fundamental temperaments. Children high in approach temperament tend to experience positive emotions more frequently, and smile, laugh, and talk more often. They also tend to be more impulsive, show a higher rate of approaching objects, experience more pleasure in high intensity in situations, and find social interactions more rewarding. In contrast, children high in avoidance temperament tend to show higher levels of discomfort, fear, and sadness, and lower levels of activity, impulsivity, and aggression. They also tend to have lower positive expectations for reward, which puts them at higher risk for developing depression. Children who are high in approach and low in avoidance are at particular risk for developing behavioral problems due to their heightened impulsivity, unbridled by fear. Structuring classroom learning environments. In 1992, Carol Ames published a series of papers describing how classroom learning environments can be structured to make different learning goals salient. These key structures from the acronym TARGET. T is for how learning activities are designed. A is for how much a lesson plan gives children autonomy. R is for how children are rewarded. G is for how children are grouped together. E is for how children are evaluated. T is for the timing and pacing of instructions and assignments. Creativity. In a recent study, Benjamin Baird, Jonathan Smallwood, and Jonathan Schooler had participants take a classic measure of divergent thinking that requires generating as many unusual uses as possible for a common object, such as a brick, in a limited amount of time. They assessed divergent thinking performance before and after an incubation period and found that participants who were given an easy task during an incubation period showed greater improvements in divergent thinking compared to those who engaged in demanding task, had quiet rest, or had no break during the incubation period. In fact, the individuals who were provided with the best conditions for mind wandering showed an improvement of 40% compared to their baseline level of divergent thinking performance. Psychologists have investigated the various stages of the creative process, from the initial burst of inspiration to the last drop of paint on the canvas. While it's increasingly clear that fluid reasoning and executive functioning can be beneficial for creative cognition, some of those same mechanisms can also inhibit creativity at some stages in the creative process, and for some forms of creative expression. Children provide a great example. They are less immune to getting stuck in a single mode of thought, and their executive functions aren't fully developed. An intriguing possibility is that their underdeveloped prefrontal cortex enables their creativity. Pull back all the labels. People with all different kinds of minds are capable of accomplishing extraordinary things in their own way and in their own time. Why can't we value all kinds of minds without devaluing any? Why not keep our minds open to the possibility that people can discover their love and commitment to a domain at any point in their lives? The single most important contribution education can make to a child's development is to help him towards a field where his talents best suit him. We should spend less time ranking children and more time helping them to identify their natural competencies and gifts and cultivate those. It's time to pull back all the labels, expectations, and preconceptions that have been in place over the past 100 years and finally redefine intelligence.